I'm Anthony. Thank you all for coming. My co-authors are Russ Belowski and Alex Halderman. So let's just jump right in. Unfortunately, our paper was not released until recently. That's because of a disclosure, so you guys all probably have no idea what I'm talking about. So we did some analysis on Lights Out Server Management. I will be calling that IPMI. And what that is, it's a management utility to manage a large cluster of servers. So say you had to manage all these servers, you need to do OS installs, you need to do some sort of monitoring, make sure they're working right, power cycle, et cetera. How do you do this? You can use external hardware, but that gets kind of clumsy, and then everyone has different stuff. So Intel came along and they introduced IPMI. It's a specification, and essentially the salient points here are, it adds a second computer, it's always on, and it's integrated directly into your system. So it connects to a lot of buses, it can talk to Southbridge, and there's a whole bunch of OEM names here. Perhaps you might have heard of one of those. These are all implementations of the IPMI. So this is, the BMC is basically the second computer here. Of course, it has a different name because it comes out of Intel. But it's really just a second computer, and it connects to all these different buses, connects to Southbridge, connects to your sensors, and it's integrated directly into your motherboard, into your system. So some of the typical implementations, what you'll see is it's embedded or it's an expansion card. It's usually a typical embedded system, an ARM or a MIPS, and they usually run Linux. In addition to the IPMI specification, OEMs add additional features. The most common ones here are the remote virtual console, so this is like a VNC or a remote desktop, and remote media. So the remote media allows you to mount a disk and do a remote OS install. They also tend to add a whole bunch of additional protocols. For example, they'll give you like a web page to do your management, or they'll give you an SSH that you can log in and do stuff. So why do we care about this? Well, in short, it's kind of perfect if you were an attacker. It's kind of the perfect spying backdoor. It's always on. A lot of manufacturers ship this pre-enabled, so our Supermicro system, for example, automatically gets an IP as soon as you plug the box in, whether you were going to use IPMI or not. They have dedicated NICs, although on our system, the NIC failed over to the host NIC. So even if you didn't plug that one in, it would try to use the host NIC. Like I said, there's powerful remote tools to do remote mounting, to do remote viewing. And there's really widespread deployment. So we'll show some stats later. We did some internet scans and we found over 100,000 of these on public IPs. And also, there's also some reason to fear already because it really is an embedded system, embedded into your motherboard. And we keep seeing this over and over again, all of these embedded systems that have just major security vulnerabilities, that security's kind of an afterthought. And so it's already kind of troubling that this is being integrated directly into our servers and it has so much power. So there's already some known problems. These are not original to us. You can find these on web forums with sysadmins talking about the default passwords, talking about anonymous accounts that manufacturers will put on these. And we found that our passwords were stored in plain text directly on the device as well. So the reason why this matters is because if you're a sysadmin and you buy a new server and you plug it in and you're not expecting to use IPMI, if it comes auto-enabled and you plug it in, all of a sudden you have a default password that's exposed to some public IP, hopefully not, but it could be, and you're vulnerable without even knowing it. So it's kind of distressing. So there's some recent developments. Nobody was really doing too much work in this space until recently. Dan Farmer popped up in the beginning of the year in January here and more or less started publicly denouncing IPMI, coming out and saying it has way too much power, that they're riddled with vulnerabilities, these are going to be attacked, this is really dangerous, although he didn't really have any exploits to actually back up the kind of stuff he was saying, but it was logically consistent. But he did find a couple flaws, well, one in particular. He was messing around with the file system and he discovered that there was this debugging web page that you could type root in, hit enter, it would reboot the machine and you could SSH in as root. And this was exposed just to the web, so anybody could do this that didn't have any access. That has since been fixed. So our work was basically taking these conjectures and asking the question, well, is this really a problem? Can we find some vulnerabilities? Can we find some issues and show that we should be taking this seriously? So we looked at a super micro machine. And the machine looks something like this. So it's a Blade class server here. And on the motherboard, there's this Novaton BC. It's an ARM-based machine. And that runs some firmware here made by A10 Technology. Inside there, of course, it's running a Linux OS. It's a relatively old Linux OS. And on that, it presents an HTML interface, and there's a CGI backend that's written in C. The important point I want you to get out of this slide is the build date on this firmware. So the build date is November of last year, so this is relatively new. This is only about 4 months old when we got it. So the web interface looks something like this. There's a lot of different controls here. You can go in configuration. You can monitor different sensors and so on. There's also an SSH interface, but it's not what you would expect. You might expect a Unix terminal here. You actually get what's called Smash, which is a very simplistic interface. It just gives you the ability to set user permissions, monitor sensors, the kind of stuff you do in IPMI. But the important point here is you don't actually have control to that embedded system underneath everything. So if an attacker attacked it and actually got a Unix terminal, he's at a lower level than you are. And the backend is supported by a highly modified fork of Dropbear. So we took a reverse engineering approach. We downloaded some firmware binaries from the OEM website. We scanned them, we unpacked them. We used this great tool called Binwalk, so it scans through and it looks for different hex signatures in the binary and can find things like file systems. So I've highlighted a couple here. These are the important ones. So we extracted those and we mounted those. And essentially what we wanted to do was we wanted to probe the web interface and see how secure it was. So we did a lot of reverse engineering of the CGI programs. So if you're doing this kind of work and you unpack this binary, the first thing you look for is all of the classics. You don't start looking for more complicated things until you've proven to yourself that they've done input validation, that they don't have any shell injections, that they're checking their length when they do stir copies in C. So we did this work, and the first thing we discovered is they didn't do any server-side validation. They did it all on the client side in JavaScript, and they did permission checking there. So this is a piece of JavaScript code directly off of the machine. This comes off an AJAX request, and they set your permissions. And they don't do it on the server side. So they trust everything the client says. The client sends them data. Yes, you're a super user. And it only gets worse, actually, sadly. They don't do input validation of stuff going to the shell, stuff going to system, and they don't like to do stirlen of stuff in C language. So we dug in a little more, and we said, okay, let's see if we can find a shell injection. So we did some scans. We looked for stuff calling system. It turns out 15 of the 67, and we found one we could exploit. This one is in the config date time CGI program. This allows you to update the time on your server. And you'll see here with the NTP field, we'll put a little command in there to sleep for a minute. Turns out that works perfectly. It sleeps for a minute. It doesn't, they haven't even done the most basic checks. I mean, checking an IP should be fairly straightforward. So now you need to get the command output. Well, it turns out that they don't have too many classic binaries that you'd use to create a callback shell. So we opted to find another way to do it. So we grep through and we found that this CGI program simply just catted out the log file here. So we can just redirect to there, and all of a sudden we have more or less a functioning terminal. And it's a root terminal. We wrapped a Python script around this, and here we are hacking at a root terminal that a system administrator would not even have. Now, some of you that are paying really close attention might be thinking, well, you did this in the config date time program. Don't you need a user account to do that? Well, that's true. So this doesn't actually give you go find a random server on the web and attack it power. So you don't quite have it. There's, of course, several ways you can try to get passwords. We chose a much more direct approach. because we discovered we could exploit a buffer overflow. So to give you an example of how this works, the server backend looks a lot like this. It's all CGI programs in the backend, they're all written in C, and they're all running as root, and this is idiomatic C for the people who developed this firmware. And this is the login handler. They have a buffer overflow in their login handler, of all things. Now, when I discovered this, I was, of course, dumbfounded. I was thinking, there's a Stirland somewhere. They have it in CGI get variable. They have to. It turns out they didn't, but they did check length somewhere. They opted the client side, of course, with another obscure language called HTML. I decided that the 64 there wasn't quite big enough. 1,000's much better. And of course, we enter a bunch of data and internal server error. The buffer overflow happens, it doesn't produce any output, internal server error, it crashes. We have a buffer overflow. So the next question, of course, is what kind of defenses? It is 2013 after all. We have all these wonderful defenses that we've discovered over the past year. Surely they have some of them. Well, they don't have data execution prevention. This is the write XOR execute. So you can put stuff on the stack or the heap and you can execute it, no problem. There's no stack canaries, so you can run over the stack and the operating system won't kick you out. No problems there. They do have some limited ASOR though. That's the good news. The bad news is it's not for dynamic libraries. Only the stack and the heap are randomized. You can do a return to libc. You can jump right to system if you like. So we wanted to build a proof of concept to show these problems. So we did run into some problems here. Of course, the stack is randomized, but that's not really a problem. This is a 32-bit system. There's only 12 bits that actually get randomized because you have to map all the other stuff. So there's only 4,000 possibilities. We can brute force this. Wonderful. Also, the stack is pretty small when we gain control. Because this program was so small and simple, everything's written in main. So we actually gain control when we return from main. So we can't actually spend too much time, or we can't actually make our shellcode too big, or else we'll run into problems there. And also, this is kind of an annoying one. The BMC, for some reason, crashes and reboots if you pound it too hard with requests. I haven't figured out the reason for this, but it's really annoying. Anyway, so our solution looks something like this. We chose to use the name buffer, which was 128 characters. We'd use that to store the actual shell command we wanted to execute. And then we can just brute force through the stack randomization, just trying it a bunch of times, basically. And we need some kind of rate limiting on the request. But still, we can do it in about 7 minutes. So it's reasonably fast, and you have root access on the thing. So the payload, we decided that we would modify the stock drop bear SSH daemon. We changed two instructions and got it to launch binsh, so we get a shell, and we changed it so it accepts the incorrect password, so flipping a BNE to a BEQ. We wget that into the machine, execute it, and all of a sudden, root at localhost. So this is distressing. So we, of course, filed a disclosure. First, we checked their website. We downloaded a whole bunch of their firmware. We compared the login program to see if they were the same. We found about half of them appear to have this vulnerability. 135 device miles. They tell us they're working on a fix. We have not seen one. We're supposed to meet with them here shortly. But ultimately, it's actually an A10-based product. So this is a third-party company they work with, and so we don't actually know all of the products that they've used this firmware in, so it could actually be even more widespread than just the Supermicro system. So I want to talk a little bit about the greater impacts of this. Clearly, rooting this device was easy. They have blatant vulnerabilities. These are known problems. These are things we should have fixed a long time ago. This was more or less pretty easy. But what are the implications? Is this just another broken embedded system? We've seen these before. I would argue no. I would say this is much more than just another. Because it's integrated directly with the server. We take this device, we put it on the server, we package them together, and they talk. They talk on all their buses. And so adding this IPMI device can only make that server weaker. And so we need to make sure this is secure if we want to expect that our servers are secure. So there's a lot of things you can do with this. IPMI for evil, yes. Of course, the really low-hanging fruit is botnets and spyware. But you can do much more. So you can take your rooted BMC and you can now attack the host system. You can do that by mounting a custom OS through your remote mounting capability and reboot. You're effectively the manager of the system now once you have the BMC. You can use your rooted host system to root the BMC. For example, you could flash the BMC with malicious code. And that leads me directly into perhaps the scariest thing you could do is if you could gain the control and flash the BMC, because the administrator doesn't even have a Unix terminal, because he's not on that level, you could actually make a backdoor that potentially survives forever and they wouldn't even know. How would you know? If you're a system administrator, how do you know your IPMI is not just emulated by some attacker who got there first? It's worth considering. So we did some network measurements. We wanted to know, is this a problem? Are these on the internet? Is this a wide-scale problem that we should worry about right now? And what we found is, indeed, that's true. We found that by using ZMAP, which is a wonderful tool. You guys should all go to the talk. Yes, I'm plugging it. But we downloaded all of the SSL certificates, and we used different characteristics from our systems that we got from its default certificates. You can look in the paper to find those. And what we found was over 100,000 of these three vendors are directly connected to public IPs right now. And in particular, these 41,000 are of the model that we attacked. So those are all vulnerable. We believe that to be true, at least. So some defenses. Of course, if you're a system administrator, you don't want to be one of those 41,000. You don't want to be the guy who gets your system attacked because you had your IPMI device on the net. So don't put it on the net. It should be behind a VLAN. These devices are not safe to have on the internet in this age. If you don't use it, don't have it enabled. Change the default password. But ultimately, and unfortunately, you're kind of at the will of the vendor. And that's the sad truth. If they give you a broken system and you use it and someone even gets past your VLAN, what are you going to do about it if they're not practicing defense in depth? That's the sad reality. For vendors, what do you say? These are textbook vulnerabilities. This is awful. We should not be having these problems in 2013. Widely deployed on the internet, connected directly to your server. This should be done right. So some lessons here. What I realized working on this project with my colleagues and talking to some people is I think this kind of represents a sort of culture clash between the embedded systems world and the internet. We keep seeing all of these embedded systems pop up and people keep talking about all the vulnerabilities with them. And I think it speaks to sort of the PC era when we started plugging PCs into the net, and now we're kind of doing the same thing with embedded, and we're starting to see a lot of issues with them. So for example, if you have a coffee pot, nobody cares if you have 5 buffer overflows in it. What are you gonna do with a coffee pot? But if you take your embedded system and you plug it into your server, now it's a big deal. Sorry? Oh. That would be fun. Talk to me, I wanna do that. Anyway, I hope IPMI is the worst it gets. I hope it doesn't have to get to a point where it's any worse than it already is. So there's of course a lot of future work that you can do in this area. It's kind of an emerging area, it's exciting. We've only actually looked at one vendor with this talk. There's a lot more that can be reverse engineered and looked at and see what they do. One that excites me is the firmware update exploitation, see what you could do in terms of changing how the BMC functions and what you could get away with as an attacker. And also, The truth is, we actually don't know what the attackers are doing with this out in the wild. We don't know what they're doing once they get inside. We do know there's some anecdotal evidence that they've used these for spam bots in the past, but we don't know if they actually knew what they had. So there's a lot of work. We'd like to set up an IPMI honeypot and figure out what we find. So some conclusions. This is, of course, a very important thing for system administrators. I don't know how I would do it if I didn't have a system like this and had to administer a bunch of computers. So it's very important. It's a crucial technology. Of course, where it sits in the stack just has lots of security potential problems written all over it. At least one vendor, the system we looked at, is horribly, horribly broken. And I would like to say that Farmer's conjecture is correct. I think this is a serious concern. This is something that needs to be fixed and needs to be taken seriously. And just in general, I want our work to kind of be a call to arms to people who do research in this sort of area, to system administrators to understand these risks, and to vendors to get it right. So I think that's it. I can take questions.
Yeah, hi, this is Rick again. Yeah, one of the things I think you didn't say enough about is when you said something had been patched, right? You talked to Supermicro, or was it Dell, and said, hey, they have a patch for this. Well, keep in mind that this is a patch for the flash on your server motherboard. So if you haven't reflashed your server, then you don't have this patch. And you don't any of your tools for managing your system or checking security, you don't have any tools for managing your system, for managing the IPMI and the BMC. You have no visibility into this. It's totally opaque. Mm-hmm. If you throw away a server and you actually have been actively using IPMI, it has a clear text password on it that somebody can take, read the flash, and now they have the password that you've been using to manage your server farm. So, you know, there's lots to this. This is very juicy. And of course, yep, that you found like 110,000 of these just doing this internet scan. There's more than just 110,000. Yep. There's loads of these out
these
there.
These are default certificates.
Yeah.
This is an underestimation.
Sure. Do you mention Dan? Dan's updated his paper just a couple of weeks ago.
He has updated his paper. He just published one. He cited our paper even.
Good.
It's worth checking
out.
So
you know. Okay.
Yeah. Right. You're absolutely right. I only have so much time to talk here, but you're absolutely right. There's a whole nother talk we could have about firmware and keeping that up to date, and the fact that most people probably don't realize that there's so much there. You're absolutely right.
Any thought to coming up with tools to actually look at what people are running on IPMI?
In terms of what they're using it for?
Yeah, right, because one of the things that's really lacking here is that there's no way, like if you are running a server farm, how do you know what you're running on your IPM? You know, what is IPMI doing? Or actually, what's running on the BMC? How do you look at the firmware? Because you really have this lousy IPMI interface that you demonstrated.
Yeah.
And it's really opaque to the host. Another thing is that because it's on the South bus, it has access to your memory, to your NIC, to all your hardware. The only thing about its access to memory is that it doesn't go through the memory controller, so it's like raw memory, so it's not mapped. But other than that, it can read or write any memory. I mean, this thing is horrible.
There's a lot you can do with it, and we have yet to see that.
Have you seen any vendors that are doing anything right? Because you called out a few that are, you know, have some errors. Have you seen any that you looked at and you're like, hey, this looks pretty reasonable?
Yeah, so first, I don't want to make a public announcement or a public endorsement of any company or say that, oh, this company is perfect, and then somebody finds tons of vulnerabilities, of course. But I did play around with an HP system, and I didn't find too many issues there. But that said, it doesn't mean that it's secure in any form. That particular system, it was a little harder to reverse engineer because they used a proprietary operating system. So I just didn't get as far yet with it. That's all I can conclude, sorry.
In terms of persistent backdoors, did you investigate any bad block techniques for the flash?
Can you say that one more time? The final?
So marking some blocks in the flash as being bad and hiding them there for your persistent backdoors?
That is a great idea. We didn't try that, no. I love it, though. It's awesome.